Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Thank you, big boys in the sky. We are back home at our respective home studios. Barton Simmons over there, Chip Patterson here. We got to spend the weekend, and I hope that for those of you that joined us that you enjoyed it. It was Georgia and South Carolina. It was LSU, Alabama. If you tuned in on CBSSports.com or the CBS Sports app, you caught us during pregame, halftime, and postgame, which Barton included a 90-minute postgame slash pregame show. You did well.
I had fun with it. Yeah. I thought it was, hey, our job was easy. We were just talking ball.
Yeah.
That was a good time. I enjoyed it.
Shout out to Matthew Coca and the entire staff. Casey Kiernan and everybody else involved. That was a chore. You know, the Georgia South Carolina. It was. We'll get to that game in a little bit. But they started running the ball up the middle. Clock was moving quickly. We're like, okay. We're going to break down every single top 25 game that's going on right now. And luckily, we had a good bit to discuss. So, where do you want to start, Barton? You want to start with the
Kinnick Stadium, baby?
Yeah, we got to start with going to Woodshed, Iowa, 55-24.
Absolutely, man. That was the weekend right there. I mean, if that was the only story, I would have been content with a crazy weekend, but there was a lot more to chew on, but I think you got to start right there in the heartland.
The funny phrase we were kicking around watching is just like Iowa is like the old Les Miles phrase from Death Valley. It was like Death Valley, where dreams go to die. It's like, no, that's Kinnick Stadium now. Like Kinnick Stadium, when the sun sets over Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City, it's where dreams go to die. I think that when you're looking at this, how much of the Iowa offensive explosion, Nathan Stanley coming out for 5 tutties in this game, as a team, they roll up 243 yards of rushing. Like, I was praising and crowning this Ohio State defense. I've been in love with this group. I've always loved their athleticism, the pressure they get up front. What happened here?
Man, they got worked. I rewatched the game last night, and this was, and not that I thought it was like this in real time, but there was no fluke. There was no, JT Barrett had a couple tip balls that there was that first pick six, but then Ohio State marched right back down the field, responded with a touchdown where they looked, 10 out of 10 type of drive. And Iowa had to respond again, and they did. And then, for the first half, it was a back and forth game. And I'm just so impressed with Iowa and a few different aspects of it. One, Brian Ferentz, I thought, called an awesome game.
Offensive coordinator.
Offensive coordinator, son of Kirk, first year as the OC, previously was the offensive line coach. And obviously, there's a microscope on him because this is his first year and does he deserve the gig because he's the coach's son and that kind of thing. But, they had such a good game plan. They knew exactly what they wanted out of every play. And he really trusted his quarterback, Nate Stanley. And that was the other guy that really impressed me, man. He was on it.
Yeah.
Like he looked totally in control and it helped that he was protected all day long. Like there was one sack, only one or a couple other times I can think of where he was even pressured, with two starting offensive tackles that were freshmen. I thought Iowa looked just so good, and to put up 55 points. I mean, there were all kinds of like benchmarks in this game in terms of what they did to an Urban Meyer team or an Ohio State team, most points, I think, since like 1994, that this team has given up. It just all over the board, Iowa was breaking records against this Ohio State defense. And it's supposed to be one of the best defenses in college football, and it's supposed to be, I mean, We talked about it before the season. Greg Schiano calling this the best defensive line he's had ever, including the Bucs.
Oh, great call. That's right.
And here they are, and they can't even pressure the quarterback with a couple of true freshman offensive tackles, or not true freshman, but two freshman offensive tackles in a pro-style offense. This is just all about Iowa, man. This is about Iowa. I mean, I think obviously Ohio State didn't show up, but Iowa went out there and won this thing.
Iowa has nothing. It's a 6-3 on the season and has not gotten blown out. Lost to Penn State. We, of course, remember 21-19 by two. Lose to Northwestern by a touchdown. Lose to Michigan State by a touchdown. Iowa is not going to be making the college football playoff. They are not going to be in the Big Ten championship, but they have been a consistent team pretty much all season. I mean, even that first game against Iowa State, when we consider sort of what Iowa State has become, like, no one, I'm not going to be out here trying to champion Iowa, but this is a team where I feel like we gloss over the potential for Iowa to be this good, right? Like, we imagine them as being able to knock off a Michigan or knock off an Ohio State, for them to be like a really tough out. But I think that this in particular has me reevaluating the Hawkeyes as a whole, to the point where I'm like, you know what? Like when I was filling out my ballot for the CBS Sports 130, I was like, this might be one of the 30 best teams in the country.
I put them in my top 25.
Yeah, that's and like, yeah, did you have them there before?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I was totally reevaluating this team, and I was like, man, shame on me, you know? Shame on me for, I mean, just because you've just been credit to being a model of consistency under Kirk Ferentz, but at the same time, it's like, man, this particular team, the 2017 group, has been playing some pretty good football. It's always fun to watch, just like you mentioned, just beating them, right? Like, winning at the line of scrimmage, quarterback that is not making mistakes, a defense, Josh Jackson had three picks in this game.
Yeah, and they were
they had the one-handed grab.
The one was ridiculous. But, I mean, all three of them were showing really good ball skills. It's funny, like, we talked about it down in Fort Lauderdale this weekend, but JT Barrett didn't fool me last week.
Mm.
You know, he may have fooled some folks, but I feel like I put it out there enough that I wasn't buying in yet. I needed to see more. He had one really good game. And in that game, we didn't see him correct the things that have been issues throughout the year. And sure enough, in this Iowa game,
good golly,
really all they did, they played zone coverage. They tried not to get beat deep. They did a couple times early in the game, corrected that, played some robber coverage that sort of allowed the defense to pick on some of those underneath routes. And they just made JT Barrett hit some windows, and he couldn't do it, and they made him pay. And you know, and I think they also sort of spied him underneath and didn't allow him to run. So when he sort of had those, got to his second or third read, he was trying to throw the football, and they broke on the ball, and Josh Jackson made him pay every single time he tested him. And I think now we can look back and say, hey, last week against Penn State was an outstanding performance, but he is still what he is. And Penn State proved that, or I would rather prove that with that show over the weekend.
All right, so let's JT Barrett, Ohio State. Like, what? We still got the Michigan State game coming up this weekend. We still got Michigan at the end of the season. Like, how do we feel about this Ohio State team right now?
Before we get there, I'm curious. So I'm still, like, when you recalibrate this Iowa team, the Wyoming win looks a lot better. Wyoming's like 5-3 now. Iowa State, that win, which looked like, they almost left Iowa State. Now all of a sudden, that's a pretty good win.
Right, for sure.
North Texas is having a good year. They almost beat Penn State. Michigan State, they lost by one score. Michigan State's obviously really good. And Northwestern is beating a lot of people in close games right now and is a solid football team. So I look at this game next week, and all of a sudden I am stoked to see Iowa go to Madison and play Wisconsin.
I am fired. Like, I'm fired up about it, but doesn't Camp Randall kind of give you a little bit of pause from pulling the trigger on the upset?
Of course it does, but I think we can say confidently that this is a legitimate test for Wisconsin.
Oh,
which is something we haven't been able to say, I think, really confidently until this week.
Hell yeah. It is one of the best. Like, we've got we're coming off a great slate. This next week is going to be really good too, because like you mentioned, Iowa Wisconsin is going to be awesome. The other thing that it makes me fired up about that one was seeing the way that Wisconsin played in the second half against Indiana. That was pulling away from an opponent the way that a championship contender should, and that just makes me really fired up for that matchup this weekend.
Yeah, I think this is the first time all year that I'm fully bought into Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's just they've it's been a war of attrition with me in Wisconsin, and they've beaten me down. And now, after watching the way the defense dominated and watching how Jonathan Taylor just sort of gets ahead of steam, I do believe Wisconsin is potentially playoff caliber squad. I just hope they can get an opportunity to prove it. And I think that's big for Iowa to go win that game and give them what is now a resume builder, as opposed to have to wait all the way to the Big Ten championship game, really. I guess they have Michigan, too, to prove something. But that's going to be nice. Ohio State, though. Yes, go ahead. Where are you at with Ohio State?
I'm not ready to sell my – that's the thing, is, like, this was so bad. This was so bad. And, like – I'm still not ready to sell my stock.
I'm selling my stock in the sense, well, yeah, I guess I'm not ready to sell my stock in the sense that they can still beat anybody in the country, but I do not want this team to be in the college football playoffs.
Ooh,
they don't deserve to be in it.
That is a stance that I can get behind, because I'm playing this forward and I'm like, well, look, they could win out. I mean, I think they're going to beat Michigan State by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, they could. I mean, they absolutely could. But and here we are, though, and they've got 2 losses, and neither of those losses were competitive.
Right.
You know, that's the problem. You're going to lose 2 games, and really 2 of your only tests on the road. No, the Oklahoma game was at home. But if you're going to lose 2 games and both of them by 14-plus, then that's not a college football playoff team. It's just not. If Ohio State gets in, then somehow even works himself back in. Even if we feel like, because it's all about this like eye test where we think Ohio State is one of the best teams in the country. They're so talented, and we suspect like eye test this and look. I don't care about the eye test. I don't care how bad you can beat Rutgers. If you lose to Iowa by 21 points, and you lose to Oklahoma by what was that, 31-13, 18 points?
Yeah,
that's. You can't get in the playoffs. You just can't.
The sweet irony of the national director of scouting hating on the eye test.
I like the eye test. I believe in the eye test.
Yeah, for sure.
When you're allowed to apply it. Like, I think here you can't apply it. They've proven the eye test wrong.
I have been fooled. I've gotten my heart broken by Ohio State. But I like your – if they should not be in the – I think that they can win the rest of their games in the regular season, and they can probably – beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game, which would, I think, keep the Big Ten out of the college football playoff. Like, Ohio State could ruin it for the Big Ten.
Yeah. Still this weekend, I was trying to look, like, because it seems like it could get kind of crazy. But ultimately, it boils down to just Michigan State, Ohio State's winner is the Big Ten East champion, right?
Yeah.
More than likely.
Yeah.
Because we're counting on Michigan to go and win two, you know, beat Wisconsin and beat Ohio State, which seems unlikely. And then I don't know what it, you know, I don't know what the tiebreaker is then. But you know, it's hard for me to see the loser of this game this weekend not being a Big Ten East champ.
Because Penn State's out of it now. Like, how quickly did that happen for Penn State?
Right. Like, it would have been such a great conversation today to talk about if Penn State had won that game and had lost to Ohio State, but Ohio State wins the Big Ten championship and Penn State gets left out of the playoffs, which would have been the exact flip of last year It would have just been a sweet irony.
No, Penn State getting in.
Ohio State.
Yeah, because then you would be like, well, Penn State's only got one loss, and that one loss was to the Big Ten champion in a very competitive game, and it was in Columbus. You got to put the Nittany Lions in.
Like, I think you can make a case that Michigan State is a better playoff candidate than Ohio State. Because they're two losses. They lost up to Notre Dame big, but they beat Iowa. They beat Michigan. They lost in triple overtime to Northwestern, and they beat Penn State. And how does that resume compare to Ohio State's, who have beaten Penn State, and that's it, right?
Yeah. Quality wins are not there for Ohio State.
So to me, if you want a Big Ten representative, as a Big Ten fan, you want Michigan State to win the game this weekend.
All right. So, what do you think about looking at the game, it is impossible to ignore the weather delay, right? Like, I'm not going to make excuses for it, but in terms of trying to figure out the way the game played out, you got to factor this in. Now, the Spartans, of course. Like, that is the Mark D'Antonio model. That's the Mark D'Antonio culture, the resiliency. And, the fact that they were at home certainly helped. But, you know, you mentioned Michigan State as a college football playoff candidate. But, when I play it out for Michigan State in the college football playoff against any one of the other three teams in the country, I think they get shut out again.
I'm just not that impressed.
I love this Michigan State team. But at the same time, when we're starting to, I think that they are, top 15 good, right? When we come down to later November, early December, if Michigan State does beat Ohio State, I just can't in the back of my mind be like, well, this will be 2015, when not Matt Geiger. Was it Matt Geiger? The kicker who did the rock and roll, after they beat Ohio State. And then they had that huge run. And then they get into the college football playoff, they get shut out.
Yeah, but I've been doubting Michigan State from the jump, and they're 7-2 now. After what, 3 wins last year, they're now getting kind of in a roll. I don't want to be the one to doubt Michigan State, because they never look great. They never look sexy. They just figure out ways to win the game. And I will say, Brian Lewerke threw for 400 yards against Penn State. That counts for something. They asked him to beat them, and he did. I think if he continues to progress, he gives them a little juice, because he can scramble. He's athletic. He can extend some plays. And so, I do think he gives them something unique. But I agree with you in the sense that, look, this was – credit Michigan State for winning the game, and you can't take that away from them. I do think that Penn State was at a disadvantage sitting in that locker room for 2.5 hours or whatever the hell it was, with wet socks and wet pants, and I'm sure they got to change some gear. But I imagine it was a much more pleasant experience in the Michigan State home locker room than it was in the Penn State visitors locker room.
I felt like you were doing it as there is probably some actual legitimacy to it, but I think that your point at the time was valid. Like, when you were talking about it, it's like, oh nah, Michigan State, they've got the washer and dryer in there. Like, they've got everything that you could need is going to be there when you're at home. And, as Jim Harbaugh said earlier, state of the visitor locker rooms in the Big Ten, it's pretty old school, is what I'm hearing. Yeah.
No doubt, man. Yeah. That's real. Like, you talk about things like that as if they're just sort of this artificial talking point, but that's real. If you have to go out there and play, and if you get to shower up and play in a dry pants and sit in a comfortable locker room for an hour and a half, versus a guy that has to sit in soggy socks and
like a 1954, a lot of aluminum everywhere, no warm couch.
Throw his pants on the hand dryer, in the bathroom, that that's a contrast that matters.
Yeah.
For football players. I'm just telling you.
Just telling you. Just got to spit that real. All right, before we leave the Big Ten, so we mentioned it earlier, Wisconsin pulled away, now 9-0. We'll spend a lot of time breaking down that Wisconsin-Iowa game, but I'm with you. I'm starting to feel pretty excited about that. I thought that was going to be a spot where Indiana might be able to keep it close. Here's a question. Do you think Nebraska definitely moves on from Mike Riley, like 100%?
He's starting to give them a very little out from this, right? Like they're 4-5. They've got remaining on their schedule what? They've got Iowa, Penn State, Minnesota. They could conceivably lose all three of those, especially with Minnesota being on the road. And if that happens and you're 4-8, I just don't think they want they fire him for Scott Frost.
Yeah.
But would they fire him if they can't get the guy they want right now and just hire a guy they're not excited about? I'm not convinced that they would. I'm still not convinced that Mike Riley is gone.
I'm not either. And especially like I'm sitting here playing revisionist history. They lost, but like that game went to overtime.
Right.
Nebraska could beat Minnesota. Nebraska could come out of nowhere on that Thanksgiving Friday, knock off Iowa. I'm just trying to play out all these situations where I'm like, wait a second, because to go back to your point, I'm not 100% sure that Nebraska is going to be looking absolutely miserable at the end of the season, quite like we thought when they lost to Northern Illinois earlier.
If this was a better buyer's market, I think that they would that he'd be gone. I agree. I mean, the bad losses are Oregon at Northern Illinois. But beyond that, Northwestern's excusable, given how close it was. Ohio State's Ohio State, Wisconsin's Wisconsin. You'd like to see them get just one win out of this next three, honestly. I think, and that could be enough to save his job. If they get two, he's definitely back, I think. Because then you're beaten. Then among those losses is a good Penn State team or a good Iowa team. I think Mike Riley's got a glimmer of hope here.
The Bedlam game has become I spent a lot of
Before we get out of Big Ten, though, how do you perceive the Brandon Peters experience at Michigan?
I'm with it.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's not him. That's the thing.
Up,
it's
you
not
look
him.
Up and 8 of 13, 56 yards and one touchdown. That wasn't a game I was able to spend a lot of time on. I would be curious, Michigan fans. When we get to the Pac-12, I'm going to get Stanford fans to do the same thing. But Michigan fans, I'm curious what you thought, because tweet us, let us know. Because to me, like, I looked up, and every time I looked up, Michigan was like just pounding the rock and like running, like skating off for 40 yard gains in the run game. And Brandon Peters, I liked the juice he brought last week, but I look, this looks like a John O'Korn line to me, 8 of 13, 56 yards. And so I'm just curious, and it looks like he was sacked a few times, and I just don't know where we are right now with Michigan. Are we at that point where we're in the Florida carousel now, where because you've got this uncertainty and because no one's really playing well, there's no confidence anywhere in the program in the passing game? Can Brandon Peters beat Ohio State? That's I don't know the answer to that.
Brandon Peters cannot beat Ohio State. That's for sure. Brandon Peters.
Can Michigan beat Ohio State with Brandon Peters? You're saying no?
I'm saying no.
Yeah.
I don't think that, I believe Nathan Stanley is a better quarterback than Brandon Peters.
I agree with that right now. Yeah.
But I feel like that we've been saying all season, we've been praising Caron Higdon. We've been feeling like there's there's something there in the running game, and if the Brandon Peters experience just means that he has the confidence to get them out there, get them lined up, check into the right runs, and put them in a good position. Like I don't know, the decision making with John O'Korn was so inexplicable at times. I just think that it might have gotten to a point where it was just a negative. And You know, you go from the 27-year-old six-year senior to a guy who's not only competing but still actively developing. I can see that just being a spark as it is. I don't think he has to beat teams with his arm through the passing game for us to feel like that is just having him in there might be a better position, right?
Well, and Nate Stanley first started against Wyoming, 8 of 15, 125 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, which is not dramatically better than what Brandon Peters did in his first start. And obviously they didn't ask Brandon Peters to do a lot more than that. So I think there's a chance that Brandon Peters could continue to develop and evolve. But it is just so weird that Michigan continues to be so limited. But I'm not going to, you know, hey, Georgia's doing the same thing with the same stat lines. So maybe this is just Michigan's transition into Georgia's model, their business model.
Yeah, but they need a CEO or a CFO like Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel. Like Caron Higdon,
right. Higdon and Chris Evans be that those two. I don't know.
I don't know about that either. Yeah. Okay. Bedlam. All right. What do you do when your star quarterback throws for 448 when Justice Hill like gives you 228 yards on the ground and it just happens that Baker Mayfield's on the other sideline? Like the thing that I spent a lot of my Sunday morning going back and just looking at was really diving into the Oklahoma State side of this because it's crushing. They've been there. Like, they've been one play away. I think that the nature of this rivalry, the fact that Oklahoma has dominated it while Oklahoma State has still been able to always be a national power, has just been fascinating. Like, Oklahoma just has more dudes, you know? Like, there's a Baker Mayfield. There's a Joe Mixon. You know, there's just a superstar on the other sideline that just isn't there for Oklahoma State.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is like this played out to be. I mean, this team has the horses to play in shootouts, and like you said, you listed off those stats. You listed off what Justice Hill did, and what Mason Rudolph did, and like they have the horsepower to win this game, but yeah, I mean it's frustrating when Baker Mayfield's just better, and you know this funny like. My takeaway when I look back at this game is as Oklahoma sits number 5 in the college football playoffs, I'm sure that's not going to change. Like this, a 62-52 win doesn't feel like a potential national champion. You know what I mean? Like this is just too loose and old school Big 12 for me to really feel like Oklahoma is now like channeling this elite roster. I don't know. Like this is like, I don't know. Like great football teams don't really get in these type of games. Do they?
Oklahoma does. I mean, and that goes all the way back to like Bradford, right?
But would they be giving up 52 on the other side? I mean, I know they'll score a lot, but are the great Oklahoma national title type teams giving up 52 points?
No.
I don't – even like when Oregon was making the runs and had the pace offense and you know, ton of plays. And I don't – I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but they weren't winning games 62-52, were they? I mean, they would win some games 45-20 maybe, but I just – this is – I have a hard time – with this Oklahoma team being up there with even a Notre Dame right now, because I just don't know that this defense can get it done against in a playoff type of atmosphere. So it was a good and bad for me with Oklahoma. You know, they did make all the big plays and they did have the best player on the field. But ultimately, why are they giving up 228 yards rushing to Justice Hill? Why can't they get a stop? And you know get their defense off the field. I don't know. I still think this weekend. You know we're getting what. It's funny. I mean we talked about how Oklahoma and Oklahoma State was a you know potential rematch of the Big 12 championship game. This is as far as I can tell. This will be the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah.
What we see this weekend win or lose.
And TCU's done such a good job causing problems for opposing offenses that I'm this is it. Like that this will be the answer to your question, because the TCU is the closest thing to a playoff caliber defense that Oklahoma will face in the Big 12.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean Texas just defense has played well at times, but yeah, I think TCU is the one that is this TCU is the team, and I said it, and even someone like tweeted us that was a TCU fan and said, "Man, you guys are y'all are off on TCU. Never pick TCU. You know they'll let you down at some point." And but this still feels like the roster in the Big 12 to me that's built best for the playoffs, because they do have a defense you can trust. They do have an offensive line you can trust. They do have a run game. They've got a team that can beat, that can win games in different ways. And I think that's not to say they're going to win the Big 12. Oklahoma may still win the Big 12. I just don't think Oklahoma has a team right now that I trust in the playoffs. I guess you always give a team a chance that has the best player on the field in the game. And Baker Mayfield has the potential to be that guy. So I don't want to take that away from them.
You're coming out of this huge win a little bit down on Oklahoma.
I'm just conflicted. Like I'm Oklahoma is not allowing me to be fully on board with them. Is what I'm. I guess you know. Like I come out of this so torn on Oklahoma. Like yeah, great win, Baker Mayfield. But man, 52 points. Come on. If they had won this game 31-28, I'd feel differently.
Right.
It's not about it being close. It's just about the nature of the game. And you just don't see those kind of teams win the big games in playoff-type settings.
Okay.
Like on the flip side, TCU didn't blow out Texas, but they won 24-7. And they had control the whole game. And they limited Texas to under 300 yards of total offense. I think they limited them to 9 yards rushing as a team, which is crazy. That is more... run the football, stop the run. That's the type of thing that is cliched, but that's what I feel like you got to have if you're a playoff team.
I need to go back and I haven't given Oklahoma State a rewatch yet, but coming out of halftime, the first three.
You gotta set aside 4.5 hours or something, probably, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, it's weird. I haven't had that time. Oklahoma State's first three possessions coming out of halftime, 4-and-out punt, a fumble, and then a 10-play drive that ended in an interception. Like, third quarter, I don't know. I need to find out if that is Oklahoma's defense or whether Oklahoma State just came out rusty. But it feels like that's when the game was won.
Yeah.
Because in a shootout like this, three possessions without a touchdown, you're done.
Yeah. I mean, they got a couple turnovers when they needed to as well. I mean, that's when you're opportunistic, then that matters. And I do think they've got some takeaway ability on that defense. They've got some playmakers that can create those sort of opportunities, but they just give up big plays, which is concerning.
Which is very concerning. All right. So we mentioned that Oklahoma and TCU, because they both have the win against Oklahoma State, then that head to head is lined up there. The Iowa State is actually more in the Big 12 championship race, at least in terms of being able to get a spot in the Big 12 championship, than Oklahoma State is, even after losing to West Virginia over the weekend. Like, where, when you're looking
at... Iowa State still controls their own destiny, right?
I think. That's what I'm saying.
If they beat Oklahoma State this weekend and then beat Baylor and Kansas State, I think Iowa State is in over whoever loses TCU-Oklahoma.
Correct, because they've got the wins against both Oklahoma and TCU.
Yeah, so it's crazy to think, but yeah, I mean, this is going to be, we're going to have a TCU-Oklahoma rematch in the Big 12 championship game unless Iowa State wins out, which,
sure.
There's no reason we should doubt that, I guess.
And we've had some fun with Iowa State. I apologize, Iowa State, but I guess... Like I was rooting for West Virginia. I was ready to get Iowa State out of the Big 12 championship race. I'm not going to root for Oklahoma State, but I do think that Oklahoma State will beat Iowa State this weekend.
I think they will, but Iowa State is another one that I've doubted every step of the way. So I even doubt, like I was even like even at in the first half when the score was, what, 20 to nothing or 20 to 3 or something?
Oh, yeah. We were like, all right, here we go, West Virginia. Let's blow the doors off.
Yeah, like this, all right, this is what I expected. And finally, Iowa State showing themselves. And then the second half, they just creep back in there and ugly up the game. And all of a sudden, they're, you know, they nearly come back and win. So it's Iowa State is just, they're winning it in a very, like, Matt Campbell's bringing his the Mac residue to Iowa State, just making things weird and ugly and finding ways to win.
Shout out to the Mac residue. All right, what else from the Big 12 stood out for you this weekend?
That's all I got for the Big 12. I mean, Baylor got their win. You know, no surprise there. Kansas State, Texas Tech, that was a shootout. But this conference is boiling down to those two games this weekend. Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma TCU. But hey, I guess the one other thing you got to mention is Texas fans are furious about their offense right now.
Oh, it's so bad.
Go to hook'em.com and read the message board. Man, they are they're not happy with the Golden Boy, Tom Herman. Even he's getting some shrapnel.
Yeah,
right,
but
now
isn't he going to be able to just float Tim Beck down the water?
I mean,
he's going to pat him on the back and be like, hey, sorry, man. We got to do this.
If he doesn't, he's going to face some pitchforks and angry mobs because they're calling for Tim Beck's head right now.
Oh, goodness gracious. If you want to try and get a ticket to Oklahoma, TCU, or Iowa State or Oklahoma State this weekend, you need to check it out on the SeatGeek app. And we've got a special deal for you. If you download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code 247 today, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. See, buying tickets to sports and also concerts can get really complicated, but with SeatGeek, you get a seamless mobile experience where you can both buy or sell tickets with just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. And there's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for great value. They do this by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to guarantee you get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value, help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of tickets, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code 247 today to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's promo code 247 for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. We want to go to the ACC, baby. We got our divisions straightened out. You want to start with VT Miami?
Yeah.
Miami VT?
Yeah, why not?
I think this is a really good Miami team that is going to enter the ACC championship game with one loss and make it super entertaining.
So have we totally flipped our switch on Miami to being pretender to the real deal with that win?
No, we have not. Because I don't have confidence in the quarterback play. I've got a lot of confidence in that defense. I think that Travis Homer is a stud. I think that when you look elsewhere at the skill positions, you know, Chris Herndon did come up with a touchdown. I think that you've got a lot of reasons to like their ability to make a play in these more lower scoring, grinded out games that their defense kind of helps set up. But Rozier's been pretty bad at times, even in this game. So I think that prevents me from talking about them like a national championship contender. But I still think that, like, I mean, they have an elite defense. They have a nationally elite defense, and that group should be good enough to get them into the conversation. And I think that they'll be in that conversation walking into Charlotte in the ACC championship game with a chance to play well enough to maybe win and maybe make a case for the college football playoff.
You know what I liked about that game this weekend is if there felt like there was a little bit of energy down there in, Hard Rock Field now, Hard Rock Stadium?
Hard Rock Stadium was packed. They had 63,000 fans in there.
I mean, that's That awesome. Is to me is as notable as anything. Is if you're starting to get a little bit of you know,
swagger.
Just excitement back around the program. Like that's to me is big. I love the way they came out, the energy. I think, you know, early in the week I picked Virginia Tech for my experts picks, but by Saturday we had, I think, both agreed and worked ourselves into Miami being the expected winner. So I think for them to win that game is big. For them to win in a decisive fashion is big, and as much as anything for confidence, because now they're feeling good about themselves. And they got Notre Dame coming to their place, and that's a game I could suddenly see Miami winning. Like, I really could. And I think that they are – look, we're going to talk about Clemson next, and they're no juggernaut. Like, they're not this unbeatable force. And all of a sudden, if Miami just hits it right a couple times, it wouldn't be like impossible for me to believe that they somehow win the ACC and are even undefeated and going into the playoffs.
Wow!
Like that wouldn't shock me. I mean, just because there's winnable games left, and I just don't think Clemson is that team this year that's unbeatable. So I like this team, and I think that they've found ways to win games, and they're going to continue to do that. We'll learn a lot more this weekend with Notre Dame coming to town.
Speaking of Notre Dame, how about Miami as 2017's version of like 2012 Notre Dame?
Yeah, or 2002 Ohio State, or you know, there are teams out there like this, and no one's a believer. But if they keep on winning, then they deserve what they get, you know.
Where do you see Virginia Tech? Great observation from David Teal, who's been covering Virginia Tech in Virginia forever. Incredible writer. He looked at this as a great representation of where Virginia Tech is, because Virginia Tech is a top 15 program under Justin Fuente. And given how far they'd kind of slid back in those last years under Frank Beamer, being a consistent top 15 program, that's a good thing. But the idea that Virginia Tech is a top 5, top 10 program right now has been exposed in the two losses against Clemson and Miami, because Virginia Tech just doesn't have the horses. You know, they play hard, they're well coached, but when they go up against an elite defense, that offense is not clicking the same way. They don't have that superstar running back that can help get them in and out of those tough drives when they need the hard runs. And I think that the Hokies are in a spot right now where we've got to consider them always in the mix for the ACC title, and that's a great thing. But if Miami's going to continue to load up like this, if Clemson's going to continue to be at that spot where you're just restacking and reloading elite talent, Virginia Tech's still got a way to go before they are going to be up in that next tier up. And that's kind of like, that's okay. But it's just important to remember as Virginia Tech, you know, continues to move forward, and as we adjust our expectations, that the Hokies can be there, but they're just not all the way back to that that top tier elite, you know, top 5, top 10 kind of ranking team right now.
Yeah, nothing like popped from that Virginia Tech roster on Saturday night. Nothing jumped off the screen. You know, and I think that'll come. And I actually, surprisingly, Justin Fuente has been recruiting pretty well, and he wasn't necessarily you know, Mike Norvell at Memphis right now is that's one of his deals. Like he recruits. Fuente was more of a he evaluates kind of guy, and he's sort of married those two in terms of recruiting and evaluating nicely at Virginia Tech, and I think he's off to a good start there. So I think the talent is coming. I think they're going to have some dudes there, but I agree. Like right now, the athletes jumped off the page a little more on the Miami side.
For the Miamis. And it's like when Virginia Tech is playing most of the teams in the ACC, the fact that they're well coached, and the fact that they've got great scheme, great game plan, and the fact that they play hard as hell is going to be enough to win those games. But when you're going up against the elite athleticism right now, there's just still another step to go. What do you think about... have you been catching any of the anger from NC State fans?
So what are they mad about? I saw that they're like mad at the refs, and maybe I missed a couple bad calls or something there. What's going on?
Oh boy. Oh boy. It's like Dave Doran might be the like he had no ties to NC State, but like there's always been sort of a deep rooted conspiracy theorist type tendency for the NC State fans. Like the world's against us. John Swofford doesn't want us to win, you know, and it kind of goes back to Jim Valvano, like an NCAA sanctions that were brought against Jim Valvano back in the late 80s, early 90s. And it all is just being fed right now because Dave Doran came out of that loss, walks into the media room, and he said, "See, Clemson had a laptop on their sideline. I want that investigated."
Yeah. Like, I did hear that. Like, now that you mentioned it. Yeah.
Like when you're coming out of and look, that was a tough loss where NC State outplayed Clemson for a good part of the game, but the fact was like they let one too many big play, like the Tavian Feaster run. Like there were just too many.
That was the backbreaker.
Yeah, there were just too many big plays down the stretch of that game for Clemson to be able to beat a team that was more talented than it. Like it to come out of there and just throw an aerosol can into the bonfire of a conspiracy. By the way, the laptop was just, you know, their social media manager who's just posting the clips, and that's going to be a thing, I'm sure. And yeah, the fans are furious at the refs, but it just like part of me is like, wow, that falls right in line with all the conspiracy theories that have sort of been tied to the NC State fan base. And part of me is like, oh, come on, NC State, like you were there. Like don't come out of this with just like a bad negative taste, like the world's against you and it's someone else's fault that this fell apart like that, because that kind of attitude to me is what leads to at least another loss on this schedule and a real disappointing feeling at the end of the year, instead of being able to be like, all right, well, you know, let's pull this together and let's make sure that we win the rest of our games this season.
Yeah, that's a bad like gloss to have on you on your finish there. I mean, that's kind of what this team feels like. It's like they finally got the talent to play at this kind of level. I don't know about finally, but they've got the talent to play at this kind of level, but they don't carry themselves like they are a nationally elite team. There's just something missing there, and. Yeah, by the time the game kicked off, I thought there was a really good chance NC State would win this game. And
yeah,
you,
me
I think
too.
You even picked them.
Yeah,
and they had their opportunities, but they just, like you said, just one too many mistakes. I come away from this one again. You know, Kelly Bryant, 20 carries, 88 yards,
huge, you know, carries too, like first down runs type stuff.
And he was 0-for-10 throwing the ball beyond 15 yards, which is the highest number of incompletions by a Power 5 quarterback this year, in that stat. So I mean, there are like some concerns I have with Clemson, and they're not answering them. They're just not regularly answering them.
So do you think they're going to lose to Florida State?
I mean, I kind of trust Florida State, you know? But I don't. But this is another team with flaws heading into the college football playoffs. Like they're a college football playoff team right now. They're penciled in, but they have flaws, and that's why I think that's another reason why I think Miami could beat them if they face them in the ACC championship game.
Yeah. All right. As we look elsewhere, let's go ahead and let's get Notre Dame and Wake played kind of a wild game that flew below the radar. There was never a doubt that Notre Dame was going to win this game, but Wake Forest would not go away. I look at the how do you factor in Wake's offensive success here?
I'm just impressed with those guys.
Just fighting. And
that's an offense that's been all year like under Dave Clawson. Every year it's like, man, they play good defense, but they're working at the stacks. The deck stacked against them on offense. They don't have the guys. And every game this year, every good team they played, they've managed to move the football. And, you know, there was some backdoor action to this one. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I still credit Wake for moving the ball and getting it done. I mean, Notre Dame played without Josh Adams most of the game. Brandon Wimbush was injured a little bit here and there. Ian Book came in and went 8 for 8 when he was playing. So there's plenty to like here in Notre Dame, just sort of responding to some adversity and getting the job done. But I still think Wake, what they have one win where they've kind of surprised some people by beating Louisville. That's one I could see, you know, that's a home game against NC State. Like that's a trip up spot.
Oh,
I got,
hell
Wake's,
yeah.
Wake's got another win in them. Like another win that people don't think they should have. And, you know, maybe NC State's that spot.
Yeah. I think Wake could win the next three games. At Syracuse is going to be tough, especially coming off that physical game against Notre Dame, when Syracuse is trying to run the play count up. But you finish home against NC State, you finish home against Duke. This Demon Deacons team is going bowling, no doubt.
Yeah.
Notre Dame, your general feeling about this team as it pertains to the national picture, because I came away, and it wasn't even necessarily this game as much as like it's taken me some time to buy in. It's taken me some time to be like, okay, all right, the Irish are for real. You know, like, and maybe it was when they were just beating the pants off Wake Forest early, even without Josh Adams in the game. I was like, okay, this is a team that, given a rematch against Georgia at the end of the season, could beat Georgia.
Well, they showed some offensive diversity this game. I mean, Brandon Wimbush, even despite not playing the whole game, threw for, I think, 280. And just like, you know, we should be impressed with Wake Forest offense. I mean, this Wake Forest defense is no slouch for Notre Dame to put up 48 on.
Sure.
And it was never really, I mean, they never really had any problems moving the football. And so I'm kind of on board with Notre Dame. Like, I kind of think that, you know, for a while they were number three because they've earned number three. But are they really the third best team in the country? They might just be the third best team in the country.
Yeah.
You know, and so that just feels weird to say. You know, it's taken me a long time to get there. It feels weird to say, but right now, I don't know that I would put anyone else above them in terms of not the ranking, because again, I factor in some earned there and some and sort of what you've done, resume and that sort of thing. But I'm just talking about like on the field, who I picked to win. I'm not sure I wouldn't have Notre Dame 3.
Yeah, isn't it like. In this particular season, it's just so easy for me to fall for teams that can move the ball on the ground. That's my top three teams. Alabama, Georgia, Notre Dame. It's like, can you just line up and just run downhill? Because there's a lot of teams in college football that aren't doing that right now and can't do that. And it sure seems like a good way to win.
Those are probably the three teams that are just beating the hell out of people the most on offense.
Yeah.
Just absolutely pounding them.
All right, anything else in the ACC? We got bowl-eligible Virginia.
Cam Akers alert, 199 yards, and he was awesome. But I was looking at there were some scenarios being played out for Miami making the ACC championship game, and I was sort of startled to see that
Virginia still has
all the scenarios are like, assuming Virginia loses and things like that. It's like, oh, wait, like, oh, it's 6-3. Like, Virginia's, they're in this thing. I mean, that's a huge win over a good Georgia Tech team. What a weird season they've had. But yeah, Virginia all of a sudden is, that might be quietly like one of the best jobs anyone's done in college football is Bronco Mendenhall turning that thing around this year.
Bronco Mendenhall or Matt Campbell, who is more deserving of a National Coach of the Year vote at this point?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess Matt Campbell. But Mendenhall's, that's a close second, man. That's a really close second.
I think that's
impressive.
I think Campbell ends up getting the nod because he's beat TCU and Oklahoma, the teams that look like the two best teams in the Big 12.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's enough.
Well, you know, it's a special edition of the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast because not only are we trying to get you into your favorite concerts and sporting events for the best bang for your buck, but we're trying to look after your butt, too. because MeUndies makes feel-good undies that your butt will be proud to wear, and they have
the most... right now.
You've got them on right now.
Right this second.
They're the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out for yourself, go to MeUndies.com/CFB. There are tons of styles and patterns to choose from for both men and ladies. MeUndies will have the perfect fit for any personality. MeUndies feeling is unmatched because they use a naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. And for a limited time only, check out MeUndies' first ever glow-in-the-dark print, Lights Out. So why not update your underwear drawer and glow at the same time? And if underwear isn't your thing, MeUndies also makes the softest socks in the world. So, to get 20% off and the best and softest underwear and socks you will ever own, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/CFB. That's MeUndies.com/CFB. We didn't get a chance to get the glow-in-the-darks. That's that limited time edition, right? I didn't see it.
Yeah, I did not. I need that. I need my care. I need another care package.
I need another care package for MeUndies with them glow in the darks. I'm trying to go lights out. Lights out in the bedroom. Let's go. All right. You want to... Alabama LSU. I came out of this echoing the words of Gary Danielson, which I'm sure that when we speak to him Tuesday afternoon, he will say, but Alabama, I'm coming out of this thinking that they still have... some of the they still have the spots and the ways to be beaten.
Yes. This is not an Alabama and the 12 Dwarfs type of year. Yeah. I think this is probably Alabama's the best team in the country, but this is not a them and everybody else. Even last year, like Clemson was. And this is another point I want to make on Clemson. Man, like they, to their credit, like they didn't blow anyone out last year either. Like they're all year long, you look at their schedule, it wasn't that impressive in what they did. But they had Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun Watson did Deshaun Watson things and won them a national championship. So I think if not for Deshaun Watson, Alabama was the national champion last year. This year, Alabama is probably the favorite, but they're just not like, I mean, the SEC is so bad. So they've gotten so like, look, they beat really bad Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Tennessee teams in really bad fashion. LSU is not a great LSU team, and they beat them. It was never in doubt, but it wasn't like a sexy win. I don't know. Like this team's really good. This team's really good, but this is not an unbeatable Alabama team by any stretch, I don't think.
Is this do you remember? Let me take
There's not a ton of difference between Alabama and Wisconsin.
I think that we might be programmed because of Alabama's dominance, let's say since 2009. We're a little bit more programmed to build them up as a juggernaut. And that's what happens in college football when you become a juggernaut, is that like part of it is the psychological impact. But watching this imperfect but very, very good Alabama team almost gave me those 2008, 2009, 2010, even maybe, I don't know, 2011 team was unbelievable. You know, but like, as Alabama has been building into this juggernaut, like, do you remember those years on the way up where Alabama was in these really, really tight games, and like there would be, you know, the one play by a Julio Jones, or like just it would always just be winning the games at the margins, a Terrence Cody blocked field goal or something like that. But it wasn't like you looked at Alabama as being really, really good. But I think that year after year after year after year, you know, number one recruiting class after number one recruiting class, like we've built them up into an unbeatable juggernaut when really this team might not be that far from one of those teams in 2009, 2010, 2012, something like that.
Well, here's to me the difference between this team and some of those teams was those teams were like that was when we were sort of in the heyday of just like Alabama's going to pound you. They're just going to steamroll you. And this team, if something isn't clicking in one spot, they've got so many Like, they have, what, how many skill players are there on the field? Six? I mean, they've got six skill players every play.
Are you including quarterback?
Including quarterback, yeah, that can, like, go the distance.
Yeah.
And that is what makes this team unique. And that's why, in some ways, it feels like they're just, they still haven't fully hit their stride. And I know we're saying this while they've beaten, you know, 41-9 against Arkansas and 45-7 against Tennessee and all that. So I get it. But this team, I think, is still, you're always holding your breath with them. Like, they can always, you ever never know when the dam's going to break. I think maybe the most impressive thing is they're playing without Christian Miller and Terrell Hall from early in the season, who got hurt in the Florida State game. I guess they lost a couple other linebackers. Sean Dion Hamilton and Mac Wilson, I guess, are both out for the season now too.
Yeah.
So to say that for them to lose now what is essentially four starters from their front seven, and they're not going to really miss a beat, I wouldn't imagine. I mean, that's the most impressive thing about this Alabama team. I do think they're in their toughest spot of the year when they go to at Mississippi State at night this weekend. And I think then we'll find out. Not that, you know, we know they're good, but I think then we'll find out if they're like next level good, depending on what they do against Mississippi State.
I think that
if they blow them out, then I think that I'll have a little bit of different opinion.
Mississippi State and Auburn is going to be a tremendous test for Alabama's depth on defense. Both of these teams. Like, I am not preparing myself for Alabama to lose either one of those games, but I definitely think they're going to be close.
I agree. I don't know what the number is on Mississippi State yet, but I'm very inclined to take the dog, the home dog, on that one.
All right, so what about Auburn? Because we've got Auburn, Georgia coming up. Auburn, we got. Well, I guess we need. Do you want to talk about Auburn or Texas A&M first?
My thoughts on Auburn are quick, because I think they're the same team. I don't know that we'd learn anything else. I'm proud of them for taking care of business. I actually believe that Georgia is going to have their hands full. I mean, not that that's a huge outlier statement, but like, Auburn could – everyone's sort of already talking about Georgia-Alabama in the SEC championship game, and that's going to happen regardless of this game. But Auburn could mess around and win that game.
I think Auburn could win this game. I think I looked at the opening lines, and to answer your earlier question, I think it might have opened around Mississippi State 15.5 or something like that. And I'm with you, dude. Mississippi State, absolutely.
Yeah.
But this is going to be the one I'm going to have to meditate on, because I kind of want to pull the trigger on Auburn to win this game.
Do you remember what the number was on it?
I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I this is a potential Auburn money line play. Like, because. But I do think that – I think Georgia's better coached.
Agree. Yeah, absolutely. You know?
But I think Auburn's – like, their defensive front is good enough to match up with Georgia's run game. So they can be a team, probably the first team since Georgia – or since Notre Dame, that can force Georgia to throw the ball a lot. And I think – anyways, we'll break that game down when it comes to it. But Auburn has the pieces. They're the real deal. They can give Georgia trouble even more so, I think, than Alabama.
Mm. All right, so what about the Texas A&M side? This is it for Kevin Sumlin, right?
I don't know. Do you want to take us through the spectrum of Sumlin that we experienced on Saturday?
Yeah, let's okay. So,
Hashtag spectrum of Sumlin?
Yeah, the hashtag spectrum of Sumlin is being able to start, Kellen Mond can't do anything, Kevin Sumlin's done. But then, good coaching decision. You know, really, really had Nick Starkle ready, got him in there. You know, Starkle leads a couple scoring drives, Texas A&M's back in this thing, and then it fell apart. Then Jeff Holland and everybody started eating. And so I feel like within the game, the spectrum of Sumlin, like, it is.
And the spectrum of Sumlin, too, is like going into this game. Well, if they lose this game, they're looking at probably 7-5. And then how do you keep Sumlin when you said you wanted to be an 8-4 coach? But if they win this game, they're beating Auburn, and you have to keep him. There's no doubt he's staying. And then they take a lead, and then or they're playing well early. and then they fall back to the pack and they say, well, maybe it's a really close game. You know, that changes the way we think about it.
And then Auburn runs away.
By 15. It's just like, man, what do we do with Sumlin? What are we going to do with that guy?
What are we going to do with him?
I don't know. I actually think he's still a pretty good coach.
I absolutely think he's a pretty good coach. I will say
he needs to go to Arizona State or somewhere and just win a lot of games without all this, you know, these regents breathing down your back.
Do you like Texas A&M's offense?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially considering that they've been limited at quarterback a little bit this year.
That's true. There has started to be, like, Auburn is the worst. Auburn's one of the worst matchups for Texas A&M's perimeter game because Auburn's athleticism on defense, up front, being able to fly to the ball side to side. It just seemed like every single time in this game that Texas A&M was trying to test on the perimeter, Aggie wide receivers weren't able to hold blocks against Auburn defenders, and Auburn defenders were doing a great job of wrapping up in space. Like, the whole premise of we're going to look for numbers advantages in the open field and hope our skill players can break one loose, like, just works against a lot of teams, just doesn't work against teams with elite athleticism.
Yeah. Yeah, and this needed to be an area where Auburn was overlooking Texas A&M a little bit. Texas A&M played above themselves a little bit. Because Auburn, you're not going to be able to run the football really consistently against Auburn. And that's what Texas A&M had to do. They found something. I mean, they had some big plays, especially early in the game. But Auburn settled in and just wasn't going to happen. So that's – I don't know. That game probably is doesn't deserve more than the 3 minutes we've given it. Because ultimately – that's what Texas A&M this year, the 5-4 team, and Auburn is a team that should have beaten them, and they did, you know?
All right, so 7-5 or 8-4? Because I think that if they do beat LSU, that might be even more frustrating. Like, 8-4 isn't good enough.
I agree. And Ole Miss is sitting there with all of a sudden looking like a dangerous team, but I'm with you. I think they could go 8-4 and Texas A&M is sort of has to backtrack and say, you know what, let's just stick around for another year, buddy, because who are they going to hire? I know Shad Morris is out there. Maybe they like him a lot, but I don't know that he's necessarily some home run.
Yeah.
He's kind of the same. He's sort of more of the same, isn't he?
More the same, like, kind of just like Kevin Sumlin.
He's just sort of the same profile as Kevin Sumlin, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. All right, so as we start to look around, Georgia, South Carolina, I came out of this with some credit to South Carolina. And yeah. Feeling good about this Will Muschamp coached program moving forward. I mean, it feels like South Carolina, of the disaster that is the SEC East, it feels like South Carolina is one of the programs that I would feel comfortable investing some stock in for the next 3 to 4 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I said it last week. I thought South Carolina and Georgia was going to be the new rivalry in the East, and I think this furthered that theory. Look, it's funny the way we view the expectations for Georgia and Alabama. Basically the same exact game. Same exact game, both games, Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, LSU. And I leave the Alabama game, you know, you heard me, I was almost a little critical of Alabama. And I leave the Georgia game feeling like good about both teams. Like, hey, Georgia, you know, they took the game into the fourth quarter. Fromm had to throw more. They did what they had to do. They won. And it's just, you know, with Alabama, the expectation is higher. So ultimately, we're still looking at kind of this, and I think South Carolina and LSU are about the same team too. So I think we're looking at two really evenly matched teams as we start to sort of get closer to the SEC championship game. And I think that game more and more is looking like a real legitimate, like, just absolute battle, war. That's going
to
be fun.
And I'm starting to think that I don't know if it's as much of a lock that Alabama and Georgia are going to get into the college football playoff.
Why?
Ah.
Based on just them not looking as like they're they're no doubt teams or what?
Based on one of those teams going into the SEC championship game with a loss.
Yeah, I agree.
That's when it gets hairy.
Yeah, you got to think Auburn's going to screw somebody up.
Well, that's it, man. Auburn's going to get one of the two of them.
Right.
I don't know. All right, let's talk about where things get really hairy, where things get really, really nasty. Arkansas 39, Coastal Carolina 38. Why? This is a bad Arkansas football team that is it's banged up, but this shouldn't happen. This doesn't happen. There's no way that the vibes are good in Fayetteville. Like, I don't know. I don't think Arkansas is gonna maybe make a, I don't know if Arkansas is gonna make a move on Bielema as much as I think Bielema might try and look for a way out, because
yeah, but if Bielema is gonna go to Nebraska or Kansas State now, even those schools are getting a little bit less interested if he's out here almost losing to Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, but you got to take them. That's when you talk yourself into those Big Ten championship rings.
I know. We're getting to a point in Brett Bielema's tenure, like, where this is another one where it's like, man, just go ahead and lose to Coastal Carolina. Just lose. If you're gonna play that kind of a game against a 1-8 team that was FCS last year, just lose, because it looks this bad, and you're not going to a bowl game this year, and just, you know, we are at the point in Brett Bielema's like tenure where it's like a pull off the Band-Aid time. Like, it's, we all know where this is going.
Yeah. Because it's not going up. There's no indications. There's no signs that it's going to get better.
And it might not get, like, it might not hit rock bottom for 2 years, but we know that where this is going. Maybe they get to 6-6 next year, but we know where this is going. You know, like,
yeah.
And there, this is looking like 4-8 this year. So this is just, you know, I don't know. I don't know how we resolve this, but this, we know how this story ends.
Talking about know how this story ends. Tennessee 24-10 win against Southern Miss. And I'm encouraged. All right. I look at this game and Southern Miss is a decent football team. They got John Kelly going, and you know, I feel like we've had nothing but trash to throw Tennessee's way, and Butch Jones is definitely not going to be around, but I don't know. That's not a rip off the Band-Aid situation. I think that this team being able to not totally crater, I think that that's something worth complimenting.
I don't know. You'd be hard pressed to find a Tennessee fan that didn't call what's happening right now cratering. I mean, I think everyone in Knoxville is like, man, we better be USM. I agree. Like, they showed up, they played well. The
defense
in particular.
It was homecoming. They, like, to lose to Southern Miss on homecoming would have been like not even something that I could have taken like dark joy in.
I do really honestly believe that. Not that I think Butch Jones keeps his job, because I still think that's a long shot. But I do honestly believe that if this team finishes 7-5 and wins their last three games, like, there's not going to be nearly this negativity around the program. People are going to be in a much better mood. They're going to be – it's going to turn from Butch has got to go to, man, Butch has sure done an outstanding job, but we – you know, God, I'd love to get somebody new in there. You know, it's going to – it's just to be a different vibe, and I think that's doable. I mean, Missouri, I think they're 10-point underdogs to Missouri, which is kind of crazy that Missouri's all of a sudden this, like,
world beater, the SEC
Eastern
East.
Juggernaut. Yeah. But it's gonna be a tough climb with Missouri on the road, LSU. I think Vanderbilt's a win for them, but it's at least making things interesting here down the stretch.
Is that like Texas, where Texas finishes 5-7 and they make a change, but like, at the same time, the fan base has a little bit of juice going into next season?
Could be, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that, yeah, I think, and that could build you some momentum on the recruiting trail. I mean, they're playing some freshmen that are doing good things. So there are things to get excited about with Tennessee.
And then like Texas, your American Athletic Conference coach goes out and underperforms and loses the home opener?
Yeah, and just like Texas, Tennessee better not expect to go win the East next year.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Yeah. All right, so were you the Mississippi State struggling with UMass at the time on Saturday? You made a good point. Like, let's remember UMass, even though they're 2-7, they've hung in a lot of games. But at the same time, do you have any alarm bells going off for Mississippi State?
Non-story. No worries there. Because they were already counting this win anyways. I have played in games where you expect to win, and it hadn't happened like that. I remember playing Dayton in college, and the coaches in the film room before, when we were talking to them in the meetings, you know, they were like, "Hey, we're gonna get we're gonna blow these guys out, so we're gonna get some young guys to get some reps and kickoff coverage this week," and saying things like that, and then you go out there and you win by 8 points, and it just, you start pressing, and there's a psychology to that of just looking over a team. And I don't think there's any question Mississippi State looked over the 2-6 Minutemen and knowing Alabama was the next week and just let them hang around. So I'm not worried about that.
Missouri, your Missouri Tigers, are they going to make a bowl game?
Yeah, I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
Tennessee. So they have to win two more, right? Yeah, I'm feeling it. So they have to beat – I think they beat Vanderbilt. I think they beat Arkansas. And I think – They're 10-point favorites to Tennessee. They may win the next three. I think they'll win two of the three and get to a bowl.
Tennessee, Vandy, Arkansas is about as favorable of a draw as you could ask for Missouri in terms of trying to lock up this bowl game.
Absolutely.
That would be so huge for Barry Odom and this staff.
Like, yeah, and he's a guy you kind of root for. Seems like a good dude.
He's the chosen one. He's the son of Missouri.
That's right.
All right. Pac-12, you want to talk about, you want to get some KJ Costello thoughts off your chest?
That's another one. I don't know. I need to know. That was a game I didn't get to watch. It was a corner TV. I didn't get to see much of it. I looked at the stat lines, and I look up, and Bryce Love had 69 yards rushing with one 52-yard rush. And, KJ Costello was some insane bad number.
Nine of 20 for 105 yards.
Pick.
Yeah.
So we were yelling and screaming for KJ Costello to get in there, and he doesn't do anything. So I need to know what he looked like. I hadn't watched the game yet. Disappointed that he couldn't pull it out.
I'm disappointed in Stanford, man. Like how I feel. I could have tricked myself, and this is speaks as much to the psychology of trying to evaluate and project things out. I could have probably tricked myself into getting up for Stanford Washington. And you know what? Stanford still could beat Washington. I don't think Washington is a world beater, but you take a loss here and it makes Friday's Stanford Washington game look much less enticing.
It does. That was going to be a fun game.
Yeah.
It's just the Stanford they just seem so close. Like this year, I kept on thinking they could get on a run, and they just never have. They just never have gotten in rhythm offensively or defensively. And I think you got to credit Alex Grinch again at Washington State. Man, I mean, to think that this Washington State team a few years ago can limit Stanford to whatever they had, 100 yards rushing, is just such a far cry from what they used to be.
Good point.
I'm not more impressed with a defensive coordinator in the country than what he's done consistently at Washington State.
Yeah, every year they've gotten better. Awesome win for Washington State. A Washington State team that, of course, has had its own fair share of a roller coaster. You know, having the 37-3 loss to Cal. You know, you get Khalil Tated on the week before, and to be able to rally back here. I mean, we're looking at a spot where if Washington State can go on the road, beat Utah this weekend, you get a week off, and you go into the Apple Cup with a chance to be able to win the Pac-12 North and play for the Pac-12 championship game. That's that is an accomplishment for this Washington State program for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Leach, he's the best, man. He's one of the best out there. Mike Leach is a top 10 coach.
Oh, like when we do our coach rankings, like the same thought.
Top 10
yeah.
Coach.
The same thought that it's like, you know, you've got to consider like all factors. Like you can't just throw it down, just based on the wins and losses. But just like when you consider longevity, when you consider the different places he's won and what he's built in yeah. Lubbock and in Pullman,
it's unthinkable. What he's done in both those spots is unthinkable.
All right.
Here's a question for you.
All right.
The coach in college football most deserving of getting fired.
Most deserving. That has not already been fired.
That has not already been fired. Or, hey, you can include already been fired. I don't. But nah, let's take off Tyson Summers. He'd probably.
Jim Mora?
Yeah, that's where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for how bad they are.
They're so bad.
I mean, he is going to squander the Josh Rosen years at UCLA with a couple of 4 or 5 win seasons. And I know Josh Rosen has been banged up in those stretches, but the defense is terrible. They give up 48 to Utah on Friday night. They can't score. He had a offensive line coach that he was paying $700,000 or $800,000 that gets popped for recruiting violations. Their offensive line has been terrible. There's just no reason for UCLA to be sitting here scraping the bottom of the Pac-12 South.
Yeah. And that's also because you said deserving, and deserving does not mean most likely. Like,
right.
Jim Mora might be one of the most deserving coaches in college football of getting removed at the end of the year, and yet I don't know if I even have him as top five for most likely.
Yeah, I mean, and they're gonna. It's. I would say it's likely that they finished last in the Pac-12 South. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, I'm sort of at a loss with this team. They could be good. They could be really good. And they got the number one player in the country this past year in Jalen Phillips. They got Josh Rosen on the roster. There's going to be some really special talent on that roster that is not going to be seen in primetime environments because no one cares about UCLA.
Mm. And if UCLA decides to keep it going, maybe UCLA doesn't care about football. So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, so they're crosstown rivals. They locked in. This was like, as you've said before going into games, doesn't this feel like one of those games where USC just locks in and they dominated? Like, Khalil Tate got his eventually, but it kind of felt like the Trojans were had established the edge going into, you know, the third, like, I guess early third quarter. Arizona was making a little bit of a push, but I thought the Trojans did a good job of establishing their dominance as the better team against Arizona, winning eventually 49-35.
They did. Yeah. Let's give USC credit on this one. And, you know, I saw people on Twitter, like, kind of like knocking them as the comeback started for Arizona. I'm not going to knock USC for this one. This is, sometimes you get in games where you got a really good player on the other side and you're going to give up some yardage. And that's what happened late in the game against USC. Sam Darnold made some unbelievable throws just like he always does. Ronald Jones looked juiced like he does when he's healthy. And I thought USC went out there and handled their business. This is a team. I'm having a hard time figuring out like how I feel about USC. But this is a team, like, is USC a team that could, I don't want to say backdoor into the playoffs, but
yes.
Like, I don't know. Like, is
yes, dude,
so you're
absolutely.
There, huh?
Yeah, no, absolutely. If, like, when we start to look for, the two lost teams that could backdoor into the playoff, USC's,
I'll take a two loss USC over a two loss Ohio State.
And I think that you start to break it down. It's like, oh, what were your loss? Like, Yeah, you got blown out by Notre Dame, but if Notre Dame's another one of those teams in the playoff, then, you know, that's got to count for something. If Washington State, if they get to avenge their Washington State loss in the Pac-12 championship game, I think that the USC could finish the year with one of the better two-loss profiles if they are the Pac-12 champions.
Yeah, I agree. And Sam Darnold's going to keep on getting hot. And I think...
And then talk about a team you don't want to play in the playoff. Oh, my gosh. Exactly.
You don't want to play these guys.
No. I think that they could cause, with some time off, to get healthy, to get like focused, and to get resettled. Like, USC could step into... would they put them in the Rose Bowl? Because it's Rose Bowl and Sugar Bowl for our semifinals this year. Like, would that be too much of a home field advantage?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, semifinals are weird. The tickets get distributed to everybody. Like, it's obviously, like, I wouldn't say actual home field advantage, but...
Isn't that basically just seeding, though? Don't they just basically seed them 1-4 and not worry about home field? And geographical location and that sort of thing.
Hey, they say that, but conspiracy theorist inside my head, thinks that they try and make sure that these things line up conveniently.
Yeah, I don't know. USC's a fun team right now. I mean, like you said. I think that's my takeaway. Is I don't know. I don't know that like I fully trust them yet, but I sure don't want to play them.
All right. So, what do you think about Washington?
Man, I just kind of hate it that laid that clunker, because we could be sitting here really fired up about Washington if they hadn't laid that Arizona State clunker.
We would be talking about Washington like Wisconsin.
I think we would. I think given that they were in the playoffs last year, I think they would be being talked about at an even like more elevated level.
But they don't have. I mean, the win, like, there isn't a quality win yet.
No, there isn't.
Colorado, Oregon State, Cal.
And they're
UCLA,
still relying
Oregon.
On Dante Pettis to like return punts in order to generate offense in a lot of cases.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's this weekend, this Friday, right? I guess they're going at Stanford. I still think that's a game that's going to be. I don't know, man. Stanford doesn't. I don't trust them to do anything worthwhile.
I'm having more fun with Washington State right now, to the point where like I'm kind of leaning Cougars in the Apple Cup.
Yeah, I mean, Washington's going to go through the season. Stanford's not going to be ranked this week, so Washington's going to go through the season
without a single ranked opponent.
Without a top 25 opponent on their schedule.
Not top 25 wins.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a single top 25 opponent. I don't know, man. I'm kind of in this place right now where I believe that USC, if they can continue to take care of business – sort of, I guess in the last 2 weeks, it kind of seems like they've refound their footing. Then I'm kind of feeling that USC path to, they might be able to backdoor into the playoff. They might not, but I feel like if they win the Pac-12 championship on that Friday night, then as we're going into all those conference championship games on Saturday, which now includes that Big 12 title game, I think that part of the math, like part of the playoff Final Four calculus is going to be, and if this happens and this happens, USC is in.
More likely to get a college football playoff, Big Ten or Pac-12?
Big Ten.
With Wisconsin?
With Wisconsin.
Yeah. I think it's fair. I think Wisconsin's, because throughout the year, everyone's been writing them off as like the lamb to the slaughter in the championship game. It's clearly time to change that narrative.
Dude.
Like they're... Yeah. At the least, they're going to go in there with a great opportunity to win. At best, they'll be a favorite. You know, like that's where we're at with Wisconsin.
Yeah, like talking about they're going to get slaughtered in the championship game as if they didn't go like neck and neck and play a thriller with Penn State in the Big Ten title game last year.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I think Wisconsin more likely, of Big Ten more likely than Pac-12 because of Wisconsin. But, as we're starting to see the way this thing breaks, like if the SEC, if Auburn's able to get either Alabama or Georgia, meaning this whole SEC getting two in, isn't quite as likely. You know, Notre Dame, man, like Notre Dame season could get spoiled by Stanford. Like, as I told you Saturday, man, we still got a lot of chaos wrinkles left in this season.
Yeah, there's no question. It's about to get kooky.
What you let's see, anything UCF escaped. Listen, my favorite thing about this was that on the Locks podcast, you both A, called this perfectly, and B, picked against it, because you said, you know what, if there's a spot on UCF's schedule going on the road at night at SMU, this is the close win. So let's lock up UCF minus 14.5.
The ultimate hedge. Pick the cover and call the upset.
Yeah.
But they still racked up 612 yards of offense. You know, they had a couple turnovers, I think, in the red zone. Like this sort of played out sort of the way I expected it to. I picked it just on the principal play. You know, if you got residual income, if you got a stock that's giving paying you dividends, you don't sell it as soon as you know it dips. You live through the dip and then watch it respond. And that's why I'm gonna play UCF again next week probably, and collect my money and it'll all even out. But that was about what I expected to see, and you know, glad they survived it, and UCF will go on killing people. How about Florida Atlantic? Still winning.
Yeah.
5-0 in Conference USA. Lane Kiffin is like he's – there's going to – given the inventory of coaches, Lane Kiffin is going to be super tempting to some AD. Just he's going to be like that siren call that the AD just tries to resist and just like has to be, you know, tied to the mast to keep from chasing him down. But – I mean, he can coach. The dude can coach offense.
I'm so excited. I'm excited to see Lane take a selfie outside of an AD's office before he goes in to a meeting that the AD thinks no one's going to find out about.
I mean, Kiffin's out here talking about like not covering the spread on purpose. And
I'm saying like
he doesn't give a rat's.
Like,
you know what?
You know what he's gonna do? He's gonna find out. Like what jobs he's connected to, and he's just gonna like start posting photos of their campus on his Twitter account. But they're just gonna be like Google image search photos.
It's like hiring a 16-year-old,
yes!
Like for your head coaching yes! job or something.
How has the boy wonder even gotten more juvenile as he's aged? Why is he Benjamin buttoning
us? Seriously,
he really
has. Yeah. It's amazing. And yet he's still, what, 42? Like we said, I think we said it before on here. Like, it's like, in the grand scheme of things, he's still just a young up-and-comer.
Scott Frost is 40. Lane Kiffin is 42.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, so they got at Louisiana Tech, FIU in the rivalry game, and then at Charlotte, a game they absolutely should win. They'll be playing for the Conference USA Championship, probably either against North Texas or UAB. And holy cow, you're right. Let's wrap on this.
Got to get by Butch Davis at FIU first.
Rivalry game. All right. So where is what school is going to be most tempted to pick up that phone?
Okay. Let's talk through this possible openings. Tennessee, Florida.
No.
Arkansas.
Maybe.
A&M.
No.
What if I would kind of love to see him at A&M?
Hell yeah. I would love to see it. I'm here for it, but I don't think A&M can withstand. I don't think A&M can handle him. Like, you know what? Lane Kiffin would be more of a distraction than Johnny Manziel.
I know. He would be. The Manziel distraction was like their glory years.
You know that
that's
Lane, you know,
the
Lane,
highest A&M's ever been.
You know Lane would bring on Manziel as a coach, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
He would.
Let's see. What about UCLA?
UCLA. Be tempting.
Would be very tempting. I mean, he's not making a ton of money at FAU. It's not like he could lowball just to come back and just needle USC.
He would, and he would be cheap. He'd be willing to go for cheap.
Yeah.
Just to go, because that's what motivates him. if he wanted money, he'd have stayed. I'm sure. I don't know. Is he getting paid more at FAU than he was at Alabama? Can't be a lot more.
Can't be a lot more. Yeah, I would imagine that he might have one of those. He might actually have a sub $1 million salary, but he's about to cash in on all the bonuses.
Right.
Like he got an incentive laden contract. He's going
to
cash in on
all. He's being a money motivated guy. I think he's just there for the hustle. He's just there for the grind.
Yeah, I think because I was looking at the American, like I was trying to think like, all right, so would he jump
like to Memphis?
Yeah, to one of the spots where they lose a coach,
right?
And he moves up.
I don't know.
Memphis will hear the call of the siren.
Yeah,
UCF might hear the call of the siren.
If I'm Memphis, I'd probably hire like that. I don't know if there's any hesitation there. If you're like a Memphis,
really? Oh man, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
What about UCF? You think UCF would go to FAU to replace Scott Frost?
I don't know that Kiffin would go to UCF.
Like
I think Kiffin has higher aspirations, right? And so if he can make that jump from FAU to Power Five, why does he need to make the stop at UCF when he's already got it going at FAU?
So do you think that Memphis is a better job than UCF?
I think it's a different job. I don't necessarily – but I think the point remains, though. Like I would be hesitant to – not hesitant. I would be a little bit surprised to see him make that jump.
Mm.
But you can't ever predict what Kiffin's doing.
Yes. He's breaking news in college football – Lane Kiffin, head coach of Florida Atlantic, has agreed to coach UCLA pro bono in an incentive-laden contract where his real estate is the only thing that's being paid for. And
he's got to go somewhere that lets him hire his like renegade coaching staff, too.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I love it. Anything else you want to clean out from the notebook?
That's all I got, man.
That's a beast. It's a beast of a show. Beast of a show. By the way,
still with us. Thanks.
The opening line was Georgia -2. I don't know where it's at right now for Auburn.
That's about right. That's gonna be tempting to play Auburn on that one. I promise you.
I'm
gonna have to meditate on that one this week.
Absolutely, because I think they could do it. It's the game, right? Like Auburn's defensive front forces like does a great job of putting Georgia in third and long, and then like just every like for once they just get the perfect roll of plays. Kerryon Johnson is able to spring a couple big ones on the outside. I mean, Jarrett Stidham played well against Texas A&M.
And if they give him if those coaches give him a chance, Jarrett Stidham's fine. It's just can Gus Malzahn stay out of his own way?
Yeah,
that's the question.
That is the question.
We'll ask Gary that this week.
He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Our thanks to SeatGeek and MeUndies. Make sure that you subscribe to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast because subscribers get them first. Barton, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.